This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
State versus Sean Combs. The Diddy trial scoreboard. Winners versus losers. Stars v. scars. I'm Nancy Grace. This is Crime Stories. I want to thank you for being with us.
If somehow he pulls out a not guilty verdict, he is going to be hell on wheels.
Okay, I don't like when you say if he's found not guilty, he's going to be hell on wheels, because I'm totally getting my car bombed. Like Kid Cudi. Yeah, there's no coming back from the itty bitty ditty and the ditty wand. I've got them all here. Yeah, he's going to come after me. Straight out to Tisa Tells, joining us at the Monahan Federal Courthouse, where Sean Combs is being tried on a multi-count federal indictment. Tisa, the star of Tisa Tells on YouTube. Tisa, what is the latest?
Nancy, in one of the most shocking turn of events, court was canceled today. Why, you might ask? A third juror mysteriously came down with vertigo and had to turn around again. Nothing makes sense as a Sean Diddy's case, and the government is this close to resting their case. Brendan Paul is this close to testifying and putting the final screws in on Diddy's whole RICO operation. And also, people are saying he's going to pull KK into the fray too. Yes, Diddy's Jeffrey Epstein will have his descent. Name Maxwell, name Christina Quorum. But why is this so odd? Because first of all, yes, I thought the same thing you did. Where was Diddy when this happened? That's right, he's locked up in the MDC. However, you couldn't write this. Diddy's team, in an astonishing move, the judge asks, does anybody have any objection to the juror coming back on Friday? The prosecution, no objection, Your Honor. Diddy, well, Yana, we need to talk to our client. We all said, what do you need to talk about? The juror has assured the judge that he will be fine from his vertigo and be back Friday morning, okay? Diddy's team then confirmed and said they wanted a sidebar because they have further questions about medical. Now, why is this so important? Well, think about it. Diddy has been trying his best to make a connection with jurors. He wanted juror number 6 to stay. He wants juror number 7 out. I think it's fair to assume that he does not have that special connection with juror number 7. However, if they can get this third juror out on medical grounds, because it's almost a home stretch, if they get sick again, who knows, then this alternate, and whoever it is, Diddy must also think he has a special connection with, he can pull that alternate down, and he thinks he can increase his chances, if not for a not guilty verdict, because let's be real, that's not happening, but pull it in so that he can actually get this mistrial that he has been begging and waiting, or at the very least have better grounds for an appeal. You guys, the judge didn't tell us much. So why is this so shocking? Well, for one, Judge Aaron has yet to tell us what's going on with juror number 7. Does he think just because we have a sick day, and again, I'll take a sick day, snow day, any way I can get it, that we do not have questions? Again, Judge Aaron has been exceedingly fair. He is expected to rule on juror number 7 on Friday. That's if this mysterious sick juror actually comes in. Again, Diddy has made it very clear who he thinks he has a special connection with. And today, he put the wheels in motion to try to find some medical ground to strike this juror out and to pull this alternate that Diddy has his eyes set on. Again, a lot of court intrigue, a lot going on. We hope the juror is okay, but for right now, we are waiting in bated breath for what the judge decides on juror number 7. And if Diddy's team was able to find a medical excuse to dismiss this third juror and pull in that alternate that Diddy has been making googly eyes at.
Joining us now outside the Monahan Federal Courthouse, Lauren Conlon, investigative reporter and star of Pop Crime TV on YouTube. Lauren, thank you for being with us. Witness after witness, excruciating detail after excruciating detail, multiple motions for mistrial by the defense. What do you make of it?
Yes, I think I speak for everyone here. We are very relieved to be moving on and having the defense start their case in chief. I think a lot of people are anxious for the witness list as well. We've already learned of a couple witnesses, and I believe the first witness will be a bad boy employee who is in charge of HR. The government has inferred numerous times that the bad boy HR department wasn't necessarily, quote unquote, real, that they just did more of Sean Combs' bidding. So I guess we'll wait and see when this person takes the stand. And Nancy, there seems to be a lot going on behind the scenes as well. The judge has been not super happy with the defense and the government, as information has seemed to be leaked to the press. I mean, it's been never a dull moment here.
You know, trials are like that. Joining me, Philip Dubé, high-profile lawyer out of L.A., has tried a lot of cases. Dubé, every trial is like a very unique animal. It reminds me in Harry Potter, toward the end, where each person was going to do battle with a dragon. And you basically reach into a bag and you pull out a miniature live dragon. You don't know which one you're going to get, and they're all lethal and deadly. You never know which way a trial is going to go. You really don't know what the witness is going to say. Who could have predicted a leak? Who could have predicted all the motions for mistrial? Who could have predicted Sean Combs getting reprimanded and threatened to be thrown out of the courtroom? Jurors getting thrown off? Every case is like this. There's no predictability when you go to trial.
Exactly. And frankly, the defense is not even predictable. I cannot tell you, Nancy, how many times in my career where I've had to develop a defense mid-trial, because a lot of times the strategy is based on how the evidence is presented and how it unfolds against the client. So you have door number one, door number two, and door number three ready to go, depending on how everything is presented. And even then, you can still lose, or the jury may throw you a bone and find reasonable doubt.
I think what you meant to say, Philip Dubé, is that evidence starts pouring from the witness stand during the state's case, and you look at your client like, that is nothing like what you told me really happened. And so you have to basically step back and do a Hail Mary. You have to change your trial strategy. And I've seen the defense changing their trial strategy during this case. Remember when Brian Steele started cross-examining one of the alleged victims in a very genial manner? I think it was Mia. And Sean Combs was twisting and turning in his seat, gnashing his teeth and twisting his tail. And suddenly, after a break, Brian Steele came at the witness like a steamroller, just tearing her to shreds. So the trial strategy had to change.
Yeah, but I got to tell you, you got to be very careful, because you don't want to turn every witness into a tripwire. You turn that courtroom into an ultimate landmine, and you don't want to upset the jury. The practical reality of it is, Nancy, that defense counsel has all discovery ahead of trial. They know exactly what all the witness statements are, what they intend to say. So it's really no surprise. The real question is, are the witnesses going to stick to that discovery script? And oftentimes they say stuff that was not memorialized in the narratives prepared by the cops. So you have to kind of learn to quickly pivot. And depending on what they say and how quickly you pivot, you might have to change your strategy, your overall tactic, and maybe even put the client on the stand to rebut it all.
Lauren Collin joining us at the Monahan Federal Courthouse. Lauren Collin, a rep from the HR department of Bad Boy Productions, correct?
Correct, Nancy.
Okay. I don't know that I would, Philip Dubé, start my case off. You know, normally you try to start with a bam, right? And then at the end, you want to start hard and finish hard. Everybody, Philip Dubé, hates HR. I mean, is there anybody on the panel that likes HR, human resources? When you see the human resources lady coming down the hall, everybody goes, oh no, who did what wrong now? Somebody did. So Dubé, I don't know, calling HR as a star witness, is that wise? And plus, an HR witness from Bad Boy Records, who's been authorizing the, let's see, extortion payment. Correct me if I'm wrong, Lauren Conlon and Sydney Summer, the extortion payment to Cassie Ventura's mother, where they wanted 20 grand and the quid pro quo was not leaking orgy videos, freak-off videos of their daughter who was just starting in her music career. That was through Bad Boy Records. All the cash that flowed through them that the sex workers were paid with, the buying the drugs by Bad Boy employees. I mean, you're putting up a bad boy HR person. That cross-examination, ouch. I mean, is that the way to kick a case off, Dubé, as one of your star witnesses?
Of course it is. One of the best kept secrets about HR in every corporation, in every business throughout America, is they're there to protect the company. They don't really care about employee interests. As a practical matter, they do damage control, risk management, and they try to assess what, if anything, that's getting reported to them, or what, if anything, they've observed could put the company at risk of liability. So they're not going to say or do anything that could harm the company, because that's where their loyalty lies.
Okay, you're still pretending that this is a company instead of Sean Combs' alter ego. To Dr. Bethany Marshall joining us, renowned psychoanalyst out of the L.A. jurisdiction, author of Deal Breakers. You can see her on Peacock and find her at drbethanymarshall.com. Why does everybody hate HR?
You know, Nancy, most of my patients who come in with major depressive disorder or sudden psychiatric symptoms, often they've gotten into trouble with their companies, and HR has come in and confronted them. And Philip Dubé is right. HR is always on the side of the company. Although, as you pointed out, what company, right? So this is basically HR doing P. Diddy's bidding. But it's not a good idea. It's not a good look when you see HR coming down the hall. And also, when you get in trouble with HR, everybody else knows about it. And whenever I submit insurance claims, my patient's first question is, are they going to find out about this in HR? They're terrified of HR.
And you know, what's so interesting, I don't know if interesting is the right word. Let me say sham. Lynn Shaw joining me, founder, executive director, Lynn's Warriors, committed to ending sex trafficking and sex abuse of girls and women. Really? The head of HR in a sex trafficking case? Where was HR when all of this was happening?
Yeah, HR equals hell racket. Exactly, Nancy. Where were they when, in my opinion, this is nothing more than this bad boy worldwide entertainment production company with their names splattered all over this skyscraper down the street from me here in New York, was doing all these things to these victims, alleged victims, and these women. Where were they to step in and say, hey, you know, if this was even a legitimate business, which I don't think it was at all, where you can't do this dirty ditty, because this will affect business. And I use that loosely, business. You better stop with these women. You better clean up your act. Nobody did anything. This is such a criminal enterprise. I can clearly see it. It is the playbook. Vulnerable people, powerful people over less fortunate people. So this hell racket equals HR is a big zero. I bet you there was no office, no HR, no anything. You had one or two people that were there to protect dirty ditty and the enterprise, the criminal enterprise, in my opinion. So let's put the focus back on victims and survivors of this dirty ditty and all victims and survivors of sexual exploitation. Where's the HR companies for all of them? They do not exist. Dirty ditty, done, going down. That hell racket, no HR in that big building down the street.
And they will be riding HR's tailpipe straight on the way to hell. To Lauren Conlon joining me outside the courthouse, one of the final witnesses for the state, Special Agent Delisa Penland. All right? Now, Penland was in charge of a lot of documents and records, and Penland was used to tie it all together. Explain the significance of one of the state's last witnesses.
What we saw, Nancy, from Special Agent Penland was charts and graphs and records, which were essentially proof of flight for escorts. We saw Jules Theodore. We saw a flight for him from LA to New York City. And then we saw a London hotel invoice and then text messages corresponding, Cassie Ventura corresponding with Jules Theodore. In addition, we also saw Clayton Howard, who was another escort, his flight records, his hotel records, and other correspondences between he and Cassie Ventura. And we also saw Sean Combs' bank records and Amex bills, which were paid with these specific banks matching up to all of these charts and graphs. And it was very, very detailed. And then I think the biggest thing of the morning with this special agent testimony was the correspondences and communications from March 5th, 2016 to March 7th, 2016, which was the morning of Cassie's beating, all the way up until he finally got the tape from the security guard. So we saw all of the, I want to say, upwards of 100 missed calls that Sean Combs made to Cassie that day, which then escalated to Christina Quorum calling Cassie, and then Christina Quorum corresponding with another assistant to try to get this video, all the way up until Eddie Garcia was corresponding with Sean Combs. And then we saw the premiere, the Perfect Match premiere photo of Cassie Ventura, which happened the very next day when she had the bruised eye and the busted lip. So they put all of this together for us. However, Kenny Garagos did point out a couple things that were wrong on the chart. She pointed out a date where Cassie Ventura wasn't actually in the country. She was in South Africa, and they had Cassie kind of matching up to this one hotel. But overall, it was a very important summary witness because we saw all of the records that go directly with the indictment.
Special Agent Delisa Penland's summary chart regarding meetings Cassie Ventura attended has 71 separate entries, and Penland testified the chart only includes entries for meetings that have associated video footage. Cassie previously testified it was impossible to determine exactly how many freak-offs she endured, but estimated hundreds. Penland is set to go over a similar chart regarding Combs' meetings with Jane next.
Diddy Steaks exhibit triple X.
Super disgusting.
The jury is watching you buck naked, or maybe he had a burqa on. The freak off hotel night, king night. Most of us call it sex trafficking caught on video. So, Lauren Conlon, the defense at the beginning said their case would last weeks, a month. And now they just drop a bomb in the courtroom saying, oh yeah, it's really only going to be 3 or 4 days. What do you anticipate the defense has in store for the jury?
Nancy, I feel like what we're going to see is people from his different entities, different companies, who are going to get on the stand and really try to legitimize everything. I also feel like he may have a handful of character witnesses as well. Perhaps they'll be an expert to combat Dr. Dawn Hughes and her testimony. That's what I'm thinking so far.
The problem with character witnesses is Lauren Conlon, and you're right. He needs a character redo. Once the defense brings on good character, the state can then bring on bad character, which typically is not allowed in a criminal case because the claim by the defense is the defendant will be tried on their bad reputation, and therefore the state is not allowed to bring that in on its own. Think of a vampire, Lauren Conlon. You have to invite it across the threshold before it sucks your blood and you die. Same thing with bad character evidence. You can't just bring it on just because you know the defendant has been convicted before. You have to either use it as a similar transaction to prove your case in chief, or wait, lie in wait for the defense to say one word about good character. And by doing that, they open the door, and the state can step over the threshold and bomb the defense with bad character, i.e. convictions. So, are they willing to risk that? But you did say you think that we have in store witnesses to legitimize what?
His businesses, Combs Enterprise, Bad Boy Records, everything that we've seen so far. I do feel like we're going to see people that worked for him who had no idea what was going on behind closed doors, what was going on at night. And we actually got a taste of this from the CFO that the government brought on. This was a man that went to Harvard, extremely polished, and they kind of used him to go through some of the money that was transferred from Cassie's parents to Bad Boy. And this CFO kind of said, yeah, that's what it says, but I had no idea what was going on. So I actually feel like there's going to be more people like him just not testifying about anything nefarious, just saying that, yeah, everything was legitimate. This LLC, this person and this company, they had a huge share in this. So Mr. Combs didn't have all the control here. He was actually just a fraction of having control over this company. I mean, listen, this is what we've heard.
Business records? Why don't you just hand over the IRS returns for the last 10 years and be done with it? What does that have to do with forced orgies and sex trafficking?
business records, my rear end. What are you talking about, woman?
I totally understand what you're saying, but this is what I feel like is going to happen based on the testimony of this one CFO. I felt like that actually went well for the defense. And so they're running from there saying, okay, we need to get more guys like this who will sit here and say, Diddy did not have 100% control of all of these different entities. He only had a fraction of control. So how could he be responsible of paying all this money illegally, through this company when
that the jury cares about who had control of all the entities? I think they're concerned about who had control of what's in his pants and what is in the pants of the sex workers and what they were doing against the will of the victims.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Okay, hold on. Lauren Conlon, how long do you believe, now remember, they're lying. How long, you're going to have to throw out anything they said. How long do you believe the defense case is going to go? How many days?
My best guess would be about a week and a half.
Oh, so you're giving them 7-8 days of testimony.
I am, only because,
Nancy, I'm not a betting person, but I guarantee it'll be less than that.
I only say this because things seem to come up every day, and then we get behind because these things come up. Again, juror issues, issues with evidence, the defense wanting a mistrial. I mean, things come up and we get behind and we end up losing hours in the courtroom at times. So that's why I'm giving them a little bit of a grace period here.
Okay, you know what? You're right, Lauren Conlon. You're absolutely right. Okay, so you're saying 7 to 8 days due to delays in the courtroom, not because they're putting up 8 days worth of testimony and evidence. Next big
Correct.
Question. Will Combs override his lawyers? Because, you know, he really does know everything in his mind. And take the stand. Will Combs take the stand, Lauren Conlon?
No way, Nancy. And I say this because specifically about the Kid Cudi incident, the alleged arson and the alleged trespassing. I feel like generally and intellectually, we all know that he was responsible. However, on paper and legally, they can't exactly prove it. So there is some doubt there. I feel like if he was to get up on the stand, they could directly ask him about this and he can't perjure himself.
You know, that was the single best move that my old co-anchor, God rest his soul, Johnny Cochran, ever made, was somehow beating down O.J. Simpson so he didn't take the stand. But, oh, it was quite the production. When the defense rested, Simpson was like, I want to take the stand, but they're not letting me. Those a-holes aren't letting me. So I'm sure Combs will put on a big show in the courtroom and act like, I really want to. I do, but she won't let me. As opposed to idiot Alex Murdaugh, his lawyers told him not to take the stand, and he took it and got convicted. So I am willing to bet that Brian Steele and Tina Garagos, both of them great lawyers, will sit on Combs and keep him physically from taking the stand. He did a voodoo ritual.
And he's probably doing blood ritual sacrifices on the rats and roaches in his jail cell.
You started this, Tease Tales, not me.
Did he pull the bird from the cage and threw it into the air? It was dead.
The poor bird sacrificed its life in exchange for a not guilty. It's going to take more than voodoo rituals to pull this one out of his you-know-where. It has literally been weeks in the Monahan Federal Courthouse for the state to put up its case. What does the defense hold? Well, for one thing, what about the witnesses the state didn't call, specifically Sean Combs, chief of staff? I guess he stole that phrase from the White House. I'm talking about Christina Corum. Listen.
Sean Diddy Combs' chief of staff, Christina Corum, has been accused of numerous atrocities, from forcing employees to carry drugs or recruit women for freak-offs, to standing witness to a gang rape after trying to place an IUD in the victim. Corum, whom Combs has referred to as his soul sister and right hand, worked for the mogul for more than a decade after previous roles at Paramount Pictures and Burberry. The two were previously close, with Combs posting a long birthday message for Corum on Instagram.
Wow. Okay. That was a bombshell. Now, let me just state, Christina Quorum denies everything. But isn't it true, Sidney Sumner, the state made a comment in open court where they referred to Christina Quorum as an unnamed co-defendant? Didn't that happen? Is that how they referred to her?
An unnamed co-conspirator, Nancy. And that was the comment that led everyone to believe that we would see Quorum testifying for the government, but it seems like she won't take the stand to prove their case. Now, most interesting to me, Nancy, in Special Agent Penland's testimony, going over all of these text messages, records, it has finally been proven that Christina Quorum knew that escorts were being invited to these hotel nights. We've had previous assistants testify that Quorum just told them the hotel nights were Combs' private time with women, but we now know that she was fully aware that there were escorts going to those rooms, and Combs' assistants and bodyguards were providing cash for him to pay for those escorts.
So those are the texts that Homeland Security Special Agent Penland rounded up and corralled and presented to the jury right near the end of the state's case. And that's what I'm talking about. For instance, when you put a case to the grand jury, right, hearsay is allowed in the grand jury, and the most effective way to do that and direct is to put on your lead investigator. Since hearsay is allowed, the lead investigator can testify to what this one said, what that one said, all of the search warrants, all of the wiretaps, all the evidence, and one fell swoop of a witness, okay? That's what Penland did. Penland brought it all together with texts, emails, documents that Sidney Sumner's talking about to show to the jury what was really happening. That may be one of the reasons out to Philip Dubé that they didn't bring on Quorum, Christina Quorum, the chief of staff, the soul sister, because why allow her on the stand when the defense would then have her on cross, and that would be basically Sean Combs testifying. And every once in a while she'd go, yes, that's right, that's right, that's right, to Agnifilo or Steele or Tenney, Garagos. So why risk that cross-examination where Quorum can explain everything away as best as she can when you can get the same damning evidence in through her texts and emails? They can't be cross-examined, right?
It was brilliantly charged. When you look at the indictment, you have all these people who are named as unindicted co-conspirators. So what that lands the prosecution without running afoul of that Crawford hearsay rule, the U.S. Supreme Court case, is that statements made by co-conspirators can come into evidence without violating due process and the federal rules against hearsay. So yes, they can come in for their truth, frankly, not even as an exception. And if the defense feels that clarification or further explanation is needed, they can put her on.
Sidney Sumner, the eye-popping number, the painful number, 46,786. 46,786 dollars. For what?
Damage to the penthouse suite at the Intercontinental Hotel on Times Square. That number is ridiculous, Nancy. That's a down payment for a home for some people. And $50K on damages to a penthouse for one stay, and that's back in 2012. So extremely concerning. What could he have possibly done to this room? We know baby oil was used, lube, candle wax was usually everywhere, but I just can't even fathom how you possibly create that much damage in a hotel room.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
And Dr. Bethany Marshall, help me. Quickly, a $50,000 hotel damage bill to the penthouse suite in New York City. We heard within the last 72 hours that there was so much baby oil, there were actually two slip and falls in one day with the baby oil, that when they saw Combs coming in, they check in, ladies go, quick, there's add on $1,000 up front for the room damage. They would have to put out air fresheners. Glade is not going to fix that, okay? Uh-uh. You can put out candles all over, and they did, put candles all over that penthouse suite. And it is not going to get rid of the stank that's going to go down during those freak-offs. So they would see Combs' entourage and like, quick, add the $1,000 up front. $1,000? This is nearly $47,000. That's not even the rental for the room. That's the damages after freak-off.
You know, Nancy, it would be interesting to see what their budget, the hotel's budget, is for decorating per room. So let's say it's $50,000 for the penthouse. They are really redoing, reconstructing, and redecorating that room. I would imagine they're pulling up the carpet, they're repainting, they're buying new furniture. You can't fix something like this, Nancy. And also, it makes me think about not just the lube, but the instruments of violence that might have been in that room. Whips, maybe knives, maybe... Don't make me laugh now.
Some things never go away. They had to pay $500 for the curtains alone. What was done to one curtain?
Maybe someone was swinging from it. What about the fine art?
What about
the kitchens and those suites?
Away? Or do you need one of these ultrasonic germ cleaners? And then people will come into that penthouse the next day or whenever it got cleaned again and just sit down on those cushions having no idea they were sitting on top of freak-off germs.
Well, now, Nancy, it's going to be like selling a house where somebody died. You just can't do it. You know, if people know that somebody's been sick and died in a house, they don't want to purchase it. Now everybody knows about P. Diddy's hotel nights and freak-offs and where they happened. Do you think those discerning clients are going to want to book a room at the penthouse at this hotel at the Intercontinental in New York City? Probably not.
Merry freak-off Christmas.
They're viewing battery.
It's like eating a dirt sandwich.
What is being done to these women?
Two words come to mind, freaky perv.
Are they being sodomized? Are they being chained in compromising positions? Are they so out of it they don't know what's happening to them? Are they being whipped?
I just want to wash my mouth out with Listerine, with Lysol, with rubbing alcohol. To Dr. Bethany Marshall joining us, renowned psychoanalyst out of the LA jurisdiction. Speaking of Christina Corum, okay? I guarantee I know one person that would hold her just as liable, although she declares her innocence, as Sean Combs. That's going to be Lynn Shaw, and I want Lynn Shaw to hear this.
Maxwell will discuss sexual topics with the victim and undress in front of the victim, or be present for sex acts involving the minor victims and evidence. Maxwell's presence as a gestalt woman helped put the victims at ease. As Maxwell and Epstein intended, this wounding process left the minor victim susceptible to sexual abuse. That abuse included sexualized massages, during which the minor victim was fully or partially nude. These sexualized massages developed into sexual encounters for which Maxwell, in some instances, was present and participated.
That's Audrey Strauss. That is the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York. And she is talking about Ghislaine Maxwell, who was the madam, the pimp, for now deceased Jeffrey Epstein. Now, the comparison between Christina Corum and Sean Combs has been made, comparing to Ghislaine Maxwell to Epstein. And the girls, the victims that Audrey Strauss was describing, were girls. Literally school girls. What effect did that have on the victims? Well, three of them have committed suicide. Most recently, Virginia Giuffre. Three, after living through Ghislaine Maxwell and Jeffrey Epstein and the sex abuse as young girls, they committed suicide. Three people committed suicide, and then Epstein reportedly killed himself. Now, Christina Quorum, again, there you go. What are they smiling about? Nothing good. That's just like the Crypt Keeper smiling at you. Yeah, that can't mean anything good. You know, woman, button up your shirt. She's behind bars right now. Christina Quorum did not take the stand. And you gotta wonder why. So Lynn Shaw joining me, executive director and founder of Lynn's Warriors, committed to ending sex abuse and sex trafficking of women and girls. You know, even the devil has an assistant. That would be Beelzebub. Yeah. Quorum has not been indicted, and she declares her innocence. What do you make of it? Because based on what we heard right at the tail end of the state's case, she knew about all those sex workers. She knew exactly what was going on.
What do I make of it? We don't have enough time for me to tell you what we make of it. First of all, we find with our work at the Warriors, there is always a woman involved as the right hand. Maybe sometimes not visible. She is always there. She is always acting as that facilitator, as that big sister, especially with these very vulnerable girls and women, or that mother figure that they never had. And they know everything. And frankly, we never had any closure, in my opinion, with Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell. They tell us she's in prison. Who really knows where she is? Because I haven't seen any videos of her walking around the prison, you know, backyard or playing basketball or any of that stuff. One never knows. We also know at the Warriors, and we have worked with a lot of Epstein victims, they are in a severe mental state. A lot of them now have reached out to me hearing about this Dirty Diddy case. They are re-traumatized, re-victimized. They feel like it's them, even though they may have had nothing to do with Diddy. So what I say about Christina Quorum, and I'm sitting here listening to all of this, you know what? They can't possibly let her get on the stand because she's already proven to us she knew about all of this. So she'll have to answer questions, and I'm no lawyer, but they can't let her anywhere near that. But you know what? In some way, shape, or form, this woman, I don't know how she puts her head on the pillow at night. She put out a paragraph about a month or so ago. She knew nothing. You know what? That is BS. She knew nothing. We have all these text messages. Women went to her for help. She did not do anything to help them. That's the Dirty Diddy way. The King Knights and all that. So we have to do something with her afterwards. I don't know what can be done. Again, I'm not a lawyer. She knows everything. She knew everything. And she did nothing. Shame on her not to help these women.
Earlier, Lauren Conlon, who's joining us right now from the courthouse, mentioned the possibility of character witnesses being brought in to help Sean Combs. Well, our friend Jimmy Kimmel had something to say about that.
Kanye showed up to support his friend Diddy, at which point the prosecution said, "We rest our case." What a character witness.
That from our friends at Jimmy Kimmel. Okay, bringing on character witnesses will absolutely misfire while Christina Quorum didn't show up for court. Kanye did. I'm sure the defense dodged a bullet, and they knew it when Kanye was forced to go in the overflow room, Philip DuBay. Can you imagine Kanye with that $900,000 mouthful of titanium teeth drooling and dragging along Bianca Censori, his naked wife, with him into the courtroom and plopping down right behind Sean Combs? With character witnesses like that? Yeah, case closed, DuBay.
Well, he's not testifying. He just went there to lend some support. And I got to tell you, out of all the trials I've done, Nancy, it is really rare for people to come to court and really stand in support. They don't even want to be associated with the charges, with the defendants who are on trial, and they just kind of stay remote from all the proceedings. So I actually give him a lot of credit for making an appearance and at least sort of signaling to Diddy that he's standing by his side, and hopefully they can be friends if and when he is ever acquitted, or maybe even.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
At the jail.
Friends? What are they going to do? Braid each other's hair and skip down the lane holding hands? Friends?
Business associates.
Oh, okay,
business
maybe they can associates. Be friends. Okay, otherwise, you know what? Hold on. I got another thing to throw at you. Another curveball. And this is going at about a 98 MPH baller. Here we go. While we didn't see Corum, and thankfully for the defense, Kanye didn't plop down in the actual courtroom in front of the jurors behind Combs, there have been fixtures in the courtroom. Combs has paraded his children in the courtroom during State's Exhibit Triple X through all the discussion of male sex workers, forced sex, beatings, you name it. And again, our legal expert, Jimmy Kimmel, is weighing in.
His mother, sister, and three sons were in the courtroom listening to his ex talk about these orgies. Not the ideal take your family to work day.
That and before was from our friends at Jimmy Kimmel on ABC. I think he's right. What happened? Sidney Sumner, his children were in the courtroom on and off throughout some of the worst state's evidence.
That's exactly right. Combs' daughters have been in the courtroom much less frequently than his sons, but at least two of his sons, his mother and his sister, have been in the courtroom for all of the heinous evidence, including when Jane testified about the sick NBA role play fantasy that Combs put her through, where he was Magic Johnson. So they have been in for a lot, and I'm frankly surprised that they haven't excused themselves more often.
We are waiting as justice unfolds. And now we remember an American hero, Officer Crystal Rivera, Chicago PD, just 46, gunned down in the line of duty, survived by daughter Bella. American hero Crystal Rivera. Nancy Grace signing off. Goodbye, friend.
This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.